Well, if you were my daughter, you'd be Caucasian, and you would get pulled over by the police. I mean, that's funny. That's really funny. Trump's going to have to turn it up if he wants to beat that. Biden is bringing it. At least somebody's bringing it. Great one. Are you going to bring it to the podcast? I don't know. I may or may not bring it. I haven't done this in a while. We're going to see how this goes. Plus, I'm coming off the tail end of being sick. Oh, great one. Would you sicky poo? Ooh, wee beep boop beep boop beep boop boo. Aww. Yes, I was sicky poo. I went to work anyway because I'm a man. And you can scream, shout, whine, cry, snivel, piss, moan, look for a motherfucking safe space. This is not it. You can shove your opinions up your ass the way Biden's cock has something to keep it company. Don't forget, man, my friend, that boy, fuck that. I was so close. I haven't done this in 2 months. Almost got it right. Oh, but then, nah, fucked it up. I had to fucking, who you got to go for? I have a great line. I can't fucking Yes. Yes, my friends and my enemies, the great one is still alive. Many of you are sad. God damn it, great one. We were really hoping you finally died. That you wouldn't be coming back on the podcast and talking about the manosphere because we're sick of hearing about it. I can't stop making fun of them. It's like a train wreck. I can't stop making fun of them. Speaking of trains, the great one rode a train. I didn't have a train, not a sexual train. Well, I'd like to have a sexual train, although not with anybody from the manosphere, just to be clear. I rode a train. The 1880 train, it's in Hill City, South Dakota. Because I love trains. Trains are great. I like taking pictures of trains. I like riding trains. I like looking at trains. In my Ancapadice paradise, that's redundant. In the fantasy Ancapadice I've created in my brain, right? There would be two modes of public transportation. Trains and zeppelins. Because those are the coolest forms of transportation. A zeppelin, you get up in the air. It's not like an airplane where you're in a hurry. You're just leisurely cruising along. And you just got this big structure underneath. You know, and it'd be nice and open. And you'd just be walking around and looking out the windows and taking your time. And there'd be a bar over there. And the bartender would be back there mixing up some cocktails. And you'd be hanging out. It'd be a beautiful, wonderful place. You just socialize and enjoy yourself as you travel through the air. Meanwhile, down on the ground, you'd have the trains down there. You'd have the railroad cars. Yeah, man. You'd have your little sleeper cars and your dining cars and your bar cars and your hanging out cars. And you'd just be going down the track just chugging along. Having a drink, getting shot down by some hot chick. Yeah, it'd be a great time. It'd be a fucking wonderful world to live in. But no, we don't live in that world. You know why we don't live in that world? Because white women have destroyed everything in their desperate attempt to treat black people as rescue animals. And as a result, we just can't have nice things anymore. So I got an email. I get a lot of emails. Yes, because I'm so incredibly popular. I've gotten some emails. You guys have sent me some stuff lately. Thanks. The thing about the woman and the husband sign, that was funny. We might talk about that. Actually, I almost did talk about that. So I don't remember what I said in the previous podcast. I think I said this. But I may not have because I can't remember. That was literally Hitler, my third attempt at recording a podcast that day. I recorded two other podcasts that you will never hear because they were terrible. I didn't get all the way through them. I got like 20 minutes into the first one and like 35, 40 minutes into the second one. I was just like, man, I'm so dead. They were so bad. I will not subject anybody to this. Anyhow, somebody else sent me something lately. What was it? Anyway. Now that now that things are slowing down, I really need to take some time and catch up on emails and do some of the material that you guys have sent me, because you guys have sent me some great shit. Fortunately, as you should know by now, this is not a current events show, so I can do stuff whenever I want to. I don't have to only do things that happened in the last 24 hours because I'm not on a news cycle with CNN. I can talk about whatever I want to talk about whenever I want to talk about it, including the manosphere. So I got an email. What was I talking about before the train? Was it the manosphere? See, I'm already losing it. I haven't done this in a while. This is the first episode of Stating the Obvious in like 2 months. Yes, it was busy as fuck, and then it rolled into September when I thought it was going to slow down. We picked up two more events at the last minute, and they were killer, and we got through all that, and now it's finally going to start to slow. I still got work to do, but it's finally going to start to slow down now. For example, I think this week, calendar week, Sunday to Saturday, I'm only working 2 days. Next week, I think I'm only working 2 days. It's like, whew. And I got over the gunk. I think I'm over the gunk. I got the gunk that I get every fucking year. It was, oh my God, do you have Wuhan? No, I don't have Wuhan. Shut the fuck up. The gunk that I get every single year when summer turns into fall and the weather starts to change and I get, my nose starts running and my throat gets sore and I cough and everything. God, I had the most miserable night ever. What was it? Maybe it was Sunday night or Monday night or something. Holy shit, I did not sleep. And I was having these weird dreams / hallucinations all night long. And I was tossing and turning and I was trying to find the electricity in the bed. And it's a long story. Just trust me. Maybe I'll tell you about it. We'll talk about electricity today, but electricity has been on my mind and it just, holy shit, I didn't sleep for shit and I thought I was going to go nuts. And it's gotten better since then. And today I woke up, this is the first day I've taken no medication so far today. Cause all I take is like the DayQuil, the NyQuil to go to sleep, whatever. And some aspirin. And then this stuff that I discovered that Rachel turned me on to that's actually halfway decent as a decongestant. So yeah, today is the first day I'm actually feeling decent. We'll see if the voice holds up or not. So I got an email after the previous podcast about Rollo Tomasi. I got an email from Rollo Tomasi. I'm not making this up. And I thought that this was important enough, you know, given his reputation and his stature, I thought this was important enough that I should talk about it on the podcast with you. The fact that Rollo sent me an email. See, he's got a really big announcement, guys. So there's these two crypto bros on the internet, and the crypto bros, they're going to do red pill cryptocurrency. And you, Rollo, extended this offer to me personally. And I'm extending it to you. If any of you want the information, get in touch with me. I'll forward Rollo's email to you. Rollo invited me personally to get in on the red pill crypto course. It's only $1,000. And I can learn all about cryptocurrency. And see, these guys are experts. They're experts. It says in the email that these two crypto bros have been quietly minting millionaires. They're minting millionaires, guys. All you have to do is take their crypto advice, which you're going to get access to for $1,000. I mean, on one hand, this is better than trying to get nude photographs of people from the internet. So, you know, because they're making fun of you on the internet and you have no idea how to cope with being made fun of. I think that's part of why I can't stop making fun of this, because these people, it's like they don't know how to cope with being made fun of. Right? Look at Jack Murphy and his meltdowns. You know, you got Cobra Tate paying people $5 to be nice to him on Twitter. We got Rolo Tomasi. Hey, can you, you've got nude pictures of her? Can you send them to me? Like, why? I mean, let's be honest. What's Rolo going to do with these naked pictures? He's going to masturbate to them. I mean, what are you going to do? Some people are saying, oh, it's revenge porn. What do you mean revenge porn? This is 2023. Women take pictures of their own assholes and put them on the internet. But there is a time, I remember this time because I was alive when it happened. There was a time when if you put a picture of a girl naked, you know, like up for public display, she would be shamed by this. And this would be a way of ridiculing her and negatively impacting her reputation. Those days ended like 20 years ago. Every woman in North America under the age of 25 has got, what, at least 100 photographs of herself naked someplace out there on hard drives and cell phones? You're not going to fucking embarrass a woman. First of all, you're not going to embarrass a woman because we're at the point where they have absolutely no sense of shame at all for anything. But you're not going to embarrass a woman from North America by displaying pictures of her titties and crotch on the internet. And I'm beating the dead horse, but the dead horse is right here, because here's the lesson I want you to take from this. This isn't about the manosphere, right? It's like my upcoming podcast about Lauren Southern's divorce is not going to be about Lauren Southern. She's just going to be incidental, okay? This is not about the manosphere. This is not even about Rolo specifically. This is about all of these people. They've all lost the ability, if they ever had it to begin with, to deal with simply being made fun of. Look at, because it's still going on, look at Dick Masterson and Eric July. I still haven't even got in the Dick episodes up to where he starts making fun of him, but I'm looking at Twitter and stuff like that, and this is still going on. And I don't know what happened that just made Dick latch on to Eric July so much, but here's the important part to get back to what I'm talking about, deal with being made fun of. Eric apparently has no idea how to deal with being made fun of. And initially, I'm all on Eric July's side. I'm like, okay, I hate comic book, the idiots that have ruined comic books. He hates the idiots that have ruined comic books. I hate statism. He hates statism. I hate colored people. Eric has really hairy arms. And this whole thing between Dick and Eric has just made me sort of abandon any allegiance. I don't know if I say allegiance, any support that I had for Eric. And it's all just because Eric has no idea how to handle being made fun of. I mean, Dick won this argument. Not because that Dick is necessarily right, but just because Dick is funny. Eric is not funny. And Eric has no idea how to handle somebody like making fun of him. Which is, you either make fun of them back or you just ignore them. I mean, didn't we all learn this in junior high? If someone's giving you shit, if you ignore them, they'll go away because what they want is attention. Didn't we all learn this in junior high? Well, Eric July didn't. Rolo Tomasi didn't. Guys, grow up and learn how to deal with being made fun of. Because another truth of our life now, at this point in the year 2023, if you exist, okay? Now, if anyone listening to this podcast that doesn't exist, you're an exception to this. But if you exist, at some point in your life, you're going to get made fun of on the internet. You may as well deal with it now. And you can get hysterical and call people names and foam at the mouth and all this other shit. And you can embarrass yourself. You can do these things. I'm not going to stop you. Or you could just learn how to deal with being made fun of. All right, if somebody made fun of me on the internet, all right, and I found it, I'm like, hey, this person's making fun of me. And I listen to it or I watch it, whatever. And I go, okay, do I have anything funny that I can say in response to this? And if I do, I'd do my little response podcast and I'd throw out some jokes and I'd be done. And if this person has, and if this person goes and makes another one, okay, but I'm done. I'm moving on. I'm not going to be like, oh my God, hey, does anybody have naked pictures of this guy they can send me? I'm going to post naked pictures of him and get back at him. I'm going to go on other people's podcasts and talk about how I've been victimized and how I've been abused and how people are trying to trap me and how everybody else is a liar except for me. Oh, I have so much integrity. All you got to do, is buy this $1,000 crypto course from these two crypto bros who are minting millionaires. It's just embarrassing. It's just pathetic how further and further everyone just plunges into immature grifting. Immature, attention-whoring, insecure grifting. Here's another thing I think may be at work here. I think some people have the problem of they can't be satisfied coupled with, and I'm talking here about Rollo Tomasi. Because again, I'm looking at Rollo Tomasi, and just because apparently I have too much free time, you see, notice how I have a sense of humor about myself. This is what Rollo's missing, along with a couple of other things. Like, for example, a daughter who's not a whore. Somebody said, apparently, Rollo Tomasi's daughter is in college being a whore. I could have told you that. I may have told you that. I did say I think Cobra Tate fucked her. Look, see, I thought about this, too. I thought about this. Let me come on my podcast, and I'm going to talk about how Rollo talks all this shit, blah, blah, blah. But he can't even raise a daughter who's not a whore. And then I had a revelation because I can think and because I'm attempting to be intellectually honest about things. I don't need to do, like, revenge porn and shit on the internet because I'm a grown-up. And so basically, I was going to try to make this attempt at assaulting the integrity and assaulting Rollo's parental integrity and parenting skills and raising a daughter skills and all this other stuff. And then I realized something. This is an extreme case, but this is a case where Rollo had no chance of raising a daughter who is anything other than a slut. Not because he lacks parenting skills, but because of who he is. Jordan Peterson has no chance of raising a daughter who's anything other than a slut. Let's be honest. Adam Piggott, if he had a daughter, she's going to be a slut. Why? Because of how far away from a slut Adam Piggott is. If Aaron Clary had a daughter, she would be a slut. Not because he lacks parenting skills, because of who Aaron Clary is, she would be a fucking left-wing, dope-smoking slut. There's nothing he could do to stop that. If Rollo Tomasi had another daughter today and applied everything he learned from the first daughter, you know what she's going to grow up to be? A slut. Not because Rollo's a bad parent, but because water runs downhill. if I had a daughter, you know what she would grow up to be? Perfect. Because she would be a princess. She would be a unicorn. She would be not like other girls. Because my daughter, she's a princess. And she would go to college and she would major in human resources. And she would change the world because she would go girl. My daughter would be a fucking slut. Okay? Children, especially women, go in the opposite direction. You know what? That's like, they don't go in the opposite. They go downhill no matter where you are. Now, what if as a father, what if you're a complete piece of shit? Does it, your daughter's going to be... No, your daughter's not going to be a fucking virgin Catholic princess. Your daughter's going to be an even bigger piece of shit. Because women, wherever they at, they start there and they destroy everything in sight, starting and finishing with themselves. So once again, I'm looking at Rolo. I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with him? Because there's clearly something wrong with him. At this point, anyone who's going to tell me there's nothing wrong with Rolo, you're just whatever. I don't know if he's paying you $5 or what. So I'm thinking, okay, look. Let's say you're Neil Armstrong and you've walked on the moon. Okay? You've done it all. Unlike a fucking white woman from North America, you actually have done it all. You've walked on the moon. What do you do now? You have two choices. You either have to sit yourself upon a task that is equally monumental, maybe not to society as a whole, but to yourself, right? You have to give yourself a challenge that is the equivalent of walking on the moon, or you have to be capable of being just truly, genuinely satisfied with where you're at. And in a way, I want to say you have to be able to have, it's like having a lack of ambition, but not in a negative way. Because normally if you say that, especially about a man, right? You say, well, he has a lack of ambition. Well, that's not a good thing because you're not going to achieve anything. You're not going to do anything. You know, if you're too content, I've said before, fish don't thrive in stagnant water. You know, what is I've always said, complacency is death. Comfort kills. Once you've done something so great, you've either got to be able to set your sights on new things, or you've got to have an amount of comfort with just resting on your laurels and kind of cruising through life. And when I look at Rolo, we're not going to do a whole episode about Rolo. Don't worry. Like, my God, great one. Are you going to talk about this for fucking 52 minutes and 20 seconds? No, I'm not. 54 minutes, 20 seconds? No, I'm not. So he wrote The Rational Male, which is a great achievement. You should still read the book, even though he's long. This is a good thing about books. See, it's like Rolo wrote the book. So the book is now, quote unquote, set in stone, right? However insane he goes tomorrow, it doesn't retroactively affect the book. Rolo wrote The Rational Male. And then he starts churning out new versions of the book that are kind of watered down and stuff. And it's like, oh, the red pill and religion. And it's like, you're kind of rolling your eyes. Okay, so it's like, okay. So, like, he's just doing the same thing now. He's treading water because he can't find something new to focus himself on other than trying to sell me crypto courses for $1,000. You know, he can't find anything new to do with himself, and he can't just be satisfied with where he is. I don't know if this makes sense or not, but it's if I'm Rolo and I know these two crypto bros that are minting millionaires, well, I would take their advice, I would become a millionaire, and I'd be on an island. This is a fucking 50-something-year-old man on the internet arguing with blue-haired cuckold homosexuals, telling them I don't have to define my terms in a when I'm having a philosophical debate, right? I mean, if you're doing that when you're 50-something years old, you are not successful. You might have more money than me. You might have written more books than me, but you're a fucking failure. Anyone on the internet arguing with Destiny and Sneeko over what a high-value man is not a success. Moving on. Let's make fun of somebody else. Let me make fun of somebody who is something of a man and something of a disappointment. Guys, remember I talked about David Goggins. I read his book. I was going to read some excerpts from the book and talk about it and do the whole thing, but the book was due back at the library. It's on hold. Other people want to read it. He is apparently very popular. I had a second book. I looked it over. It's essentially the same as the first book. It's him doing all this stuff, you know, trying to set the world record for the most pull-ups. And it's him running 100 miles and biking 100 miles and swimming 50 miles or whatever and doing all of these things. I'm like, okay, look, this is very manly. This is very tough. He is a very badass motherfucker. We cannot deny this. I cannot deny this because I'm actually rational. I do not have any nude pictures of David Goggins that I got from a stranger on the internet who just contacted me out of the blue and said, hey, would you like naked pictures of David Goggins? I don't have any nude pictures of... I do have nude pictures of Shoe on Head. You think I'm going to post those on the internet to get back at her? No, I'm going to keep those for myself and I'm going to spank the monkey to them. David Goggins. David Goggins. All right. But I'm reading the book, and I'm thinking, okay, the guy's a badass. However, the more I'm reading this, and I'm thinking, and there's something nagging in my brain, and finally it all comes together. Because I'm like, man, you know, the guy's a badass, but I got some criticisms here. I'm not sure what it is. Now that I came to understand what the criticisms are. So David Goggins, Navy SEAL, right? And he's doing all this shit. And he's doing all this shit. And in the process, he's injuring himself all the time. Throughout the book, it's like, so I did this thing, and then my feet were all fucked up, and you know, I had, stress fractures and all, and I had to be in the hospital for all this time, and it took me all these months to recover. And I'm thinking to myself, hold on. You're a Navy SEAL. You're a member of the United States military, which means you get paid with my tax money. You work for me. And as a Navy SEAL, the fact that you have now destroyed your body and have to spend X amount of time recovering, well, first of all, I have to pay for all that recovery. Right, all the medical treatment, everything I'm paying for all that. But more importantly, and I say this as a taxpayer, I also say this, however, as someone who is in the military, in a combat unit, in a light infantry unit. Goggins is a man. He is a man. Goggins is not a soldier. He is not a Navy SEAL. Because as a soldier, if you are not deployable, that means if you cannot be deployed into combat with your unit because you are injured or unhealthy, you are not a soldier. This is not an opinion. This is not something I'm saying because he's black. I will say this too. Well, it's in the military, the number of people who are not soldiers because they could never be deployed because they were physically fucked up all the time. Okay? I talked to you about Fat Johnson in my unit, right? Fat Johnson, nobody liked him, but then you've been there, you're in combat, bam, you know, Fat Johnson gets shot and he goes down. Do you risk your life to go over there and get him? Okay, well, do you? Because if you get shot and you fall down, do you want Fat Johnson to risk his life to come over there and get you? What do you do? Here's the thing. It's not a question. Well, what about if Goggins gets shot? Do I risk my life to go rescue him? Well, he's not going to get shot because he's not going to be deployed in combat. He's going to be at home sitting on his couch nursing his fucking boo-boos from doing his triathlon. He's not a soldier. And quite honestly, if you're in the military and you're a Navy SEAL and your job is to deploy into combat, you shouldn't be allowed to do that kind of shit. Chief, I'm going to go do this triathlon and then be benched for the next 6 months. Like, no, you're not, because you're not in the Navy anymore. See ya. And that's not a fucking joke. The more I thought about it, the more I realized, no. You should not. No. End of discussion. You're getting paid by the fucking taxpayers. We trained his fucking ass as a Navy SEAL to deploy into combat situations and kill the enemies of the United States. That's what he's getting paid for. He's not getting paid to fucking run triathlons because he feels like it. Now, on top of this, he did this whole bit where he did one of these things, you know, the run, bike, whatever. So he's doing the bicycle part. And so he's riding a bicycle. And he's talking about, yeah, I never really rode a bicycle before. Don't know much about bicycles. It's a bicycle I borrowed. I'm like, oh my God. And it's not like this was his first one, right? I talked about the book a little bit. Like the very first time he went and said, someone said, hey, you do this competition where you run 100 miles, you know? And he's like sitting there thinking, I'm badass. I can go run 100 miles, whatever. Like, I totally get that. The first time, you're confident. I mean, you've been through SEAL training. You are a badass. I give that one to you, right? I completely see why he showed up for that unprepared, thinking, yeah, I can knock this out. And to his credit, he did knock it out, okay? But now, at this point, it's years later. He's done things like this over and over and over. It is, to quote, no longer his first rodeo. He's showing up to ride a bicycle 100 miles or whatever it is. You know, it's some insane distance. Oh, I don't know much about bicycles, and it's a bicycle I borrowed. And so he's riding the bicycle, and he gets a flat tire. He's like, I didn't have any spare tubes. I didn't have any tools to change the tube, even if I had a spare tube. And I'm reading this, and I'm thinking to myself, okay, now I haven't talked about this in a long time because I've been out of the People's Republic of Fort Collins, but you guys know I used to go biking and shit. The one time I biked all the way around Horsetooth Reservoir off-road and all this other shit. I go biking out in the fucking trails and stuff and the forest and all this shit. I know I talked about this because it's the kind of thing I would talk about, right? Because I'm always trying to explain to you fuckers to be prepared for shit that's going to go wrong. Because some of us learned this in the military. Well, kind of foreshadowing where I'm about to go with this one. Some of us learned this shit because we were in the military before it was filled with trannies and faggots and women. Right? I'm in my bike. I got my little fucking bag on the tail. I got a set of tools for changing tires. I got another set of tools for changing tires. I got a set of tools, the wrenches and the hexes and the screwdrivers and everything that fits everything on the bike. I got not one, not two, but three spare inner tubes. I got a hand pump to inflate the tube. I got the little fucking air thingy charger with the, what the fuck do you call it? with the capsules that you stick it in you and you puncture it and the compressed air blows the tire up for you. I got that. I'm fucking ready. I can fix my bicycle and somebody else's bicycle. This motherfucker is riding over 100 miles on a bike, doesn't even have a fucking spare inner tube. I'm reading this and I think to myself, is this what you learn in the Navy SEALs? And just as I no longer have any respect for anyone who calls themselves part of the manosphere, I have lost all respect for the Navy SEALs. Like, truly, did the Navy SEALs not teach a motherfucker better than that? Okay, guys, we're going into combat. Well, should we grab any extra ammunition? Now, one clip will be fine. Okay, we got to blow up this bridge. It's going to take 3 sticks of dynamite. Let's take 3 sticks of dynamite and a piece of det cord. Well, should we take, like, maybe an extra 3 sticks of dynamite and an extra piece of det cord? No, we won't need that. It'll be fine. What could go wrong? This is what the Navy SEALs is teaching people? This guy's supposed to be a Navy fucking SEAL. He's going to go ride 100 miles on a bicycle. He doesn't have a fucking tool or a spare tube. And then he talks about how the admiral came to him and said, Goggins, you're a badass. You know what we don't have enough of in the Navy? We don't have enough colored people. Would you like to be our affirmative action recruiter? And he's all proud. Oh my God. When I was in the military, being a recruiter was where the garbage got sent. Nobody had respect for recruiters, including recruiters. Because recruiters knew the reason they got assigned to recruiting is because they pissed somebody off. That was a punishment job. You didn't, being a recruiter was not a reward. That was a punishment. And everyone knew it. Oh, Goggins, he's all happy. Oh, the admiral asked me to be a recruiter and target colored people. Oh, boy. Of course, it's not like he was deploying into combat because he was injured all the fucking time from his extracurricular activities, which the Navy should have never let him participate in. But then again, as we see, the Navy SEALs apparently are not very good at planning ahead. So speaking of planning ahead, among things the Great One has accomplished lately was organizing his pantry, going through all the canned food, found a couple of cans of food that expired, checked the dates on everything, got everything fucking rode up, hoed up, blowed up. Everything nice and organized. Got my shit that's going to expire sooner than I'm going to eat like in the next year, and then the shit that's there for a little bit longer. Hang on, I got to make a couple of quick notes here. Being made fun of. Learn how to deal with being made fun of. Really? Seriously? Not kidding. Goggins. And now we're going to talk about electricity. Electricity, electricity. I was partially inspired to do this after reading this book that I mentioned briefly, I think, in the previous podcast. And this is why I was having these weird fever dreams / hallucinations about electricity. Which side of the bed is the electricity on? So I finished the book 1 Second After by William R. Forstchen, Forstchen. There's two more books in the series. I think the next one is called 1 Year After, and I don't remember what the third one is called. Anyhow, I'm going to read the second one. This one, it was all right. I mean, it was a quick read. You know, it was a little. I don't know. I felt like some of the characters were a little predictable and stuff. But I mean, that's going to happen. You know, it's the guy. Oh, his wife died of cancer. I don't know if it was titty cancer or not. It always is. Because honestly, some of the passages where he's like with his family and they're talking about their trauma and stuff, I started zoning out and I just skimmed forward. Anyway, his wife died of something. He had the two daughters. Anyway, the book is about the United, well, a city, a specific city in the United States after the U.S. is hit by a electromagnetic pulse, and all of the electronics and all of the electrical and all of the electricity goes away. And as I have said, the electricity will go out in our lifetimes. That's you and me. Not Rolo, because Rolo doesn't have a life. Rolo is on the internet embarrassing himself. If Rolo had a life, he would not have time for this. He would not be sending me emails about $1,000 crypto courses from a couple of crypto bros who are minting millionaires. Okay? But those of us who have a life, the electricity will go out in our lives. Now, I don't think it's going to go out because of an EMP, although I'm not ruling it out. It certainly is possible because, I mean, in the end of the book, there's some military guy who talks about, yeah, all you got to do is you just blow the missile up this far above the atmosphere, and if you did that above Kansas, bam, you'd knock out pretty much everything in the entire continental United States. I mean, it's not like it can't be done. It's pretty simple. And this is one more reason why I think the whole 9/11 was fake. I mean, come on. The Arabs, they're not really that stupid. I mean, if they wanted to cripple the United States, this is exactly how you do it. And, you know, read the book. If you want to read the book, EMP burst, man, it's over for us. Because we are so dependent. We're completely dependent on electricity. And this book really kind of drives it home. Because that's the thing. You sit there and you think about how dependent you are on electricity. Anyway, let me finish my thought there. I think the electricity will go out in our lifetime, but I think it's going to be here and there. It's going to be not all at once. It's going to be gradual. Because the reason the electricity is going to go out is because the power companies are going to be filled with affirmative action hires. And the employees will just be less and less capable of keeping all the transformers maintained and replacing things that break, you know, and so there'll be like downages that'll last a few hours, and then there'll be downages of a few days, and then the electricity might be out for a week, you know, or maybe the electricity will be up during one part of the day, but at peak it's going to crater, you know, and so there'll be all these fear, and eventually one day, you know, like in this certain geographic region, the electricity just won't come back on. But it's not going to be the entire country goes dead at one time. It's going to be bits here and bits there, and it's going to hit you for a couple of weeks, and maybe. But the electricity is going to go off in our life for more than 6 hours. Like, we're all going to see multiple days with no electricity. And thus, prepare yourself accordingly. For example, have food. Have some kind of solar cells, some kind of solar power. You know, have a generator. And you know, all this depends where you live. Like for me, being in an apartment right now, it's more, I can't install solar cells. I mean, I can have a generator. The power goes out, I could run my generator. I could put it out on my porch and run it. Advertise to everybody around me that I have electricity. They will then show up and want some, and I will charge them for it, or I will have to shoot them, depending on, you know, at what level are we at is it the electricity is out and it's a minor inconvenience versus, you know, the electricity has been out for a week and there's a blizzard and I'm the only person who has electricity, in which case, yeah, I'm probably going to have to shoot someone. And of course, in that, you know, the difference between that scenario that I just outlined and the EMP is that in the scenario I think is going to happen, we're just not going to have electricity. Things that use electricity will not be destroyed. In the EMP scenario, you know, it doesn't matter if you got a solar cell, your computer is dead, your cell phone is dead, your microwave oven is dead, your refrigerator is dead, your automobiles are all dead. You know, so in the book, of course, you know, the only automobiles that would function are ones that don't have any electronic parts in them, which nowadays is all of them. But the book did a really good job of driving home the horrors of what would happen if we lost all electricity and all the electronics. You know, no vehicles, no food, because the story takes place in like a small town that is kind of in a mountainous area. So there's a little bit of farming around, but not a lot. So they don't run out of food instantly, but they run out of food. And then, of course, another big one is just the whole medical thing. That was a very descriptive term. Great one. The whole scenario of how many people in our society are on medication. In the book, one of the characters describes it thusly. He says that Americans are kind of like exotic plants in a hothouse. You know, they can exist in that controlled environment, but as soon as that controlled environment is no longer controlled, they start dying. If you stop and think about it, that is, how many Americans do you know that if they don't get their medication, and both legit and illegit, okay, by this, for one of the big example in the book here is the diabetics. The main character, his youngest daughter, is a diabetic. Well, without insulin, guess what's going to happen? Right? There's all these people in our society that they are only alive because of medical intervention. And if the electricity goes away, that medical intervention stops. To get insulin, you have to manufacture it. To manufacture insulin, you need electricity. To transport insulin, you're going to need electricity. To store the insulin, it has to be refrigerated. You need electricity. When the electricity goes away, there's a lot of people going to end up dead. And the book manages to paint a pretty ugly picture of that. They also talk about, you know, they're going in and going, yeah, and then at one point they're like, well, we need to prepare ourselves for the next onslaught. Because, you know, the characters in the book are we could only be blessed with actual leadership that is as intelligent as the people in this book. If there's anything unrealistic about this book, it's how astonishingly intelligent the people who took command of the town actually were. I'm not saying they didn't make some mistakes and they were occasionally selfish or whatever, but overall, the characters, they kind of came together and they said, all right, we're going to put the city under martial law. They did not let the woman mayor be in charge of the martial law. They had a man do it. They told her to sit down and shut up. And they put a man in charge. And overall, they made a bunch of pretty damn good decisions. And so while it's a horrifying book on one hand, it's also like this very best case scenario. Because I don't think it would go anywhere near this smooth. For example, at one point they're sitting around, they're talking about, okay, you know, we got food. So we started collecting food from the supermarkets and stuff. Because like the first couple of days, and See, I can see this. The first couple of days, everybody's just kind of walking around going, well, it might get back to normal pretty soon. And then it starts to sink in. It's like, wait a minute. It ain't going back to normal. We have to start doing, we, the government, have to start doing something. So they round up all the food that's left in the supermarkets, which is not much. And they go, okay, we're going to ration. And somebody says, well, what about people? Like, we know there's people who have food stockpiled in their house. You know, evil survivalists like the Great One who buy a bunch of food and put it in their pantry because they know good and goddamn well any moment you could have like another Wuhan hoax or a blizzard or electricity go out. And they talk about it a little bit, then they make the decision. They say, here's the deal. Like, any food you have in your house, it's yours. We're not going to come and try to take it from you, but you can't get public rations. And if you want public rations, then at that point, any food you have in your house, well, then we take it and we add it to the redistribution. And I'm thinking, that sounds very fair. I'm not a big fan of fair, but that sounds very fair. So they make a lot of good choices. So they're sitting around, they're talking at one of their little meetings, and the guy says, well, here's our next, the doctor, he says, here's our next impending crisis is the nutcases are going to start going crazy, and we're going to have to go back to locking insane people up against their will. Everyone's like, what do you mean? He says, well, look, there's all these people out there who are on medication for their personalities. And he's like, yeah, 90% of them are just on medication for their personality because they want attention. And when their medication runs out, they're really just going to be the same person. But there's like 10% of them that are genuinely fucking insane. And their medication is the only thing that's kept them under control. And when their meds run out, they're going to be like, you know, running down the street trying to cut people up or trying to jump off the top of buildings or trying to set things on fire or going nuts. And we're going to have to lock them up, and we're not going to ask their permission. We're just going to have to do it. I'm like reading this and I'm going, yeah, you know, there's something I never thought of when the shit hits the fan. What are we going to do when all these people come off their meds?